Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Natstown. Welcome to Nats Nightly, sponsored by the District Sports page and FederalBaseball.com. This is Patrick Reddington from Federal Baseball. I've got Dave Nichols from the District Sports page on the line. And, Dave, there's no way we can talk about anything else to start this. Max Scherzer, Mike Rizzo, once again, surprises the baseball world, or at least anyone who didn't read Jim Bowden's column the other day that put them as a possible landing spot. But 7 years, $210 million, $105 million of that deferred, so he's going to get $15 million for the next 14 years, I guess, $15 million a year. As far as these long, bad contracts for pitchers, which rarely go well, work out, you know, this is about as good as you can get for one of those bad contracts.
Wait, what? I thought we were going to talk about Kila Kialue.
That's the big first base signing for Syracuse, yes. And thank you for pronouncing his name.
Yeah, exactly. No, this obviously is a great move for the Nats. Any way you slice it, I really think, you know, there are going to be people that are going to want to nitpick and, you know, and drill down into things. And frankly, there are just some people. And it seems like in the D.C. market specifically, there are just some people that aren't happy with anything. But the bottom line here is Max Scherzer is one of the 3 to 5 best pitchers in Major League Baseball right now in his prime. Sure, as he gets older, he is not going to be as good as he is today, but he is as good as he is today, and next year and the year after that. So this is a great move. It further strengthens an already strength for the Nats. It gives them all sorts of options going forward with retention of players, trading of players. They know that Max Scherzer is going to be on this team for the next 7 years unless they trade him. So they have that positional security where, as before yesterday, they didn't have that. Jordan Zimmerman, free agent after this season. Doug Fister, free agent after this season. Steven Strasburg, free agent after 2017. They did not have positional security long-term at starting pitcher. They had an awful lot of talent, but not positional security. They have that now. They know Max Scherzer is going to be the leader of this staff for the next 7 years. So whatever else happens, they've got that in their pocket. They've got an awful lot of talent coming up behind them. Obviously, Tanner Roark last season really, really established himself as a major league starting pitcher. Blake Treinen is right on that cusp. A.J. Cole is right behind him. Lucas Giolito, Lopez further down in the minor leagues. I mean, the Nats have younger guys coming up, but they did not have that one guy signed under contract for long term, and Max Scherzer is that guy now.
Yeah, and you mentioned gives them a lot of options now too. The big question before the signing and the big question still afterwards is what they're going to do with their starters. Are they going to keep Jordan Zimmerman? Are they going to trade Ian Desmond, both of whom are going to be free agents after this season? Doug Fister as well, always a possibility. And then there's those rumors out there, at least one report, that Steven Strasburg is possibly available. Not the big report today, but not the only time I've heard that this winter, with Strasburg 2 years away from free agency, as you mentioned. What's Mike Rizzo's next move after this?
Well, let me start with the last first with regards to Steven Strasburg. This one report that has surfaced in the USA Today this morning by the USA Today reporter really seems to me like an agent or scout trying to muddy the water. I mean, the Nats really don't have any reason to trade Steven Strasburg at this point. He is under contract for next year. He has another year of arbitration eligible for the 2017 season. I mean, he is not a free agent for 2 years. If they want to trade him, then that's perfectly well and good. But a reporter quoting an unnamed source is saying that both sides have thought the time to move on. It's really ridiculous. That sounds like an agent or a scout to me trying to muddy the waters here. The Nats have a lot of options that they could do here. They could trade Jordan Zimmerman. They could trade Jordan Zimmerman to try to restock the upper minor leagues. They could try to trade him for a batted at a position. If they have any worry about Jason Worth being able to contribute for the first half of the season, which maybe I'm the only one in Natstown that has that worry, but I do have that worry. Maybe they could get an outfield bat. I mean, who knows? But having Scherzer under contract here kind of gives the Nats strength and security and to go out to do any of these moves. Secondarily, they don't have to do anything. They've got the best pitching staff in baseball. They have the best pitching staff in a generation of baseball. You know, they have three or four guys that would be number ones on other teams. You know, for crying out loud, Gio Gonzalez, who was third in Cy Young ballot 2 years ago, is the fifth starter. So they've got a glut of riches here at starting pitching. They could just go into the season with the five starters, have Roark in the pen, Blake Treinen in the pen, like I mentioned, A.J. Cole and Lucas Giolito on the cusp. Go and win a World Series and then deal with the repercussions then. I mean, every one of those guys that walk, Zimmerman, Pfister, Spann, Desmond, they're all going to return a first-round pick as compensation. Now, it's going to be a late first-round pick, but still, the Nationals could theoretically have five number one first-round picks in the 2017 draft. So that's not a position of any meager sort as well. So Mike Rizzo now has the world open to him here. I'm not going to guess because I'm just fascinated to see how it plays out, but he has all the tools here to do really whatever he wants to do.
And you've got to know that five first-round draft picks are, you know, sandwiched around where they put them now. It has to appeal to the Nationals with their scouting department and can't quite spend like he used to on the draft, and they can't take advantage of it like they could have a few years ago. But having that many picks has got to appeal to these guys if that's the ultimate scenario. And just circling back to Strasburg, I guess the argument for trading him at this point would be you just went through this situation with Jordan Zimmerman, Ian Desmond, where you didn't get them locked up 2 years out for a long-term extension. Now you see that once they get into this year and this winter, and especially this year once the season starts, so these guys are most likely going to want to test free agency and see if they can get the best deal possible for themselves out there. Does that sway you at all? Going back into Strasburg, but it sounds to me like you don't buy any of that talk, but I guess that would be the reasoning behind it if you're going to argue for a trade at this point.
No, I get it. I think, though, that most of that is media-driven. I mean, the Nationals knew well and good when they drafted and signed Steven Strasburg, when they drafted and signed Jordan Zimmerman, when they drafted and signed Bryce Harper, that these are players, maybe not as much with Zimmerman, but they came to know it. These are players that are going to test the free agent market. Strasburg and Harper, both Scott Boras clients, those guys obviously are going to go to free agency. They always do. Scott Boras' top clients always go to free agency. Jordan Zimmerman, it's not thinly guarded secret around Nationals Park that Jordan Zimmerman was going to test free agency. He preferred to play closer to home. He's not particularly enthused about the D.C. market. This is a guy that was going to test free agency. The Nets have known this for a couple of years. So it was no surprise that his name was being mentioned as a trade possibility. I get that Strasburg is coming into that same scenario as well, but frankly, the Nets don't have to do anything. They didn't do it with Zimmerman last year. They didn't do it with Desmond last year. Why do they have to do it now with Strasburg? They just don't. And I think, like I said, mentioned earlier, the quote from that one unnamed source about the two sides have decided to drift apart is rubbish. That's just absolute rubbish.
Now, Mike Rizzo has made clear that he thinks Ian Desmond's going to be the national shortstop in 2015, told reporters that last week after the Tyler Clifford for Yuna Escobar trade, which gives the Nationals the second baseman they've been looking for all winter. If they're going to trade one of these guys, he said basically we'd have to be blown away to trade Ian Desmond. I assume the same is the case for Jordan Zimmerman to convince them to go into this. What do you think it takes to get one of those two away from the Nationals or even possibly Pfister if they're going to trade one of their starters?
Well, it's interesting because we have something to compare that against right now because the Texas Rangers and Milwaukee Brewers made a trade. The Brewers just acquired Yovani Gallardo, a pitcher that is similar in stature to Jordan Zimmerman, and the Tigers gave up their 4-7 and like 13 prospect overall for him, but there are mixed reviews on a couple of the prospects that Milwaukee landed in exchange for Yovani Gallardo. So I think any discussion about trading Jordan Zimmerman would have to be two close to major league ready top 10 prospects and then a flyer on the third, somebody that that the Nets organization would like. I think obviously if you talk about Doug Pfister, it's probably a little less just because of the different types of pitchers they are and how power pitchers evolve as opposed to softer throwing pitchers. But any discussion for Jordan Zimmermann or Steven Strasburg is going to be breaking the bank of the other team's top prospects. I mean, you're talking about acquiring a top 10 to 15 overall in Major League Baseball prospect, another prospect that would rank somewhere in the top 40, and then a third flyer, or a Major League ready or young Major League controllable talent. You know, you think about, you know, obviously the Boston Red Sox have been mentioned as a prospective landing place for Jordan Zimmermann. Theoretically, Steven Strasburg could be in that discussion as well. I think any discussion would start with Mookie Betts and or Henry Owens, their top pitcher. I mean, Owens hasn't debuted in the major league yet. Betts got a cup of coffee last year. I think any discussion, if you're talking about having a deal with the Red Sox, would start with both of those players.
No, and if someone's willing to give those away, then Mike Rizzo starts listening. If not, he sticks with what they have right now. As we mentioned before, they lost Tyler Clifford, but you had Max Scherzer to the top of that rotation, as you mentioned. Then you have most likely Tanner Roark going back into the bullpen. He kind of takes a spot that at least pushes everyone back and sets them up with having lost Clifford last week. But Scherzer on top of that rotation. They got a strong bullpen already. There's been some reports that they're talking about adding another arm. They talked to Casey Jansen's recently, according to multiple reports. You got to love the way the rotation's set up if they stay the way they are right now. Scherzer at the top and just kind of pushing all those guys back down.
Yeah, absolutely. I do love it. I think Tanner Roark, while he was fantastic last year, is due for some regression. He never exhibited the type of stuff that he had last year in the minor league. So I think the Nats recognize this. And while he does have a bright future ahead of him, this is a guy that that generated results exceptional to his previously displayed skill. So pushing him back into the pen, I think, for this season anyway, is a logical choice. And whether that's going to be in a long relief or a short relief mode, either way, it benefits the team, especially considering the departure of Tyler Clifford. I love the idea of Casey Jansen. He had some back issues last year, but he's a veteran, dependable reliever, has closing experience. I think adding an arm like his to the back of the bullpen would be a terrific addition. I think Blake Treinen is going to thrive in a short relief role, and I think he could slide into that eighth inning slot very easily. I mean, this is a guy that's got a big fastball, a heavy sinker. I think he would thrive in that role. We have to talk about Matt Thornton, a guy that the Nationals and Mike Rizzo just stole at the deadline last year, gave up for nothing but some cash. This is another guy that's got a big arm at the back of the bullpen, a lefty, you know, closing experience, playoff experience. I mean, all these factors go into building a bullpen. And yes, the Tyler Clifford was a huge part of that pen. He certainly was as dependable in that role as you get. But the idea with drafting and cultivating all these big, heavy starting pitching arms is that if they don't come to fruition in the starting rotation, you can move them to the bullpen and they can thrive there. It's how Clifford ended up there. And I see Treinen and Roark thriving in that role as well.
You know, I'm a big fan of Blake Treinen and for what he's going to make this year compared to Tyler Clifford, who asked for $8.8 million in arbitration with the Oakland A's now. I think you've got a substitution who can fill in there, maybe eventually take that role, and you got a few options up there with Aaron Barrett as well. If he can shake off last season, two guys right there who could kind of fill that role and don't have the experience but are going to be a lot cheaper this year. And in return for Clifford, you also got 2 and possibly 3 years if you wanted a Vionel Escobar before the big Scherzer deal. That was a big trade so far this winter, where Mike Rizzo just kind of set himself up at second base, removed the need for Danny Espinosa to be playing every day, and picked up a guy that I'm not in love with necessarily, a shortstop aging 32 years old at this point, but does fill in nicely there at second base for the Nationals.
Yeah, you know, I don't think anybody in Nats Town is really thrilled about this. And like I wrote in my column when it happened, you know, Escobar is going to have a hard time making people forget that they traded Tyler Clifford for him. I mean, Clifford was one of the most popular guys on the team, terrific performer. He was active in social media, active in the community. I mean, that guy was just a model guy that you want on your team. You know, Escobar, frankly, is not that guy. I mean, he has always had a prickly reputation. He had Obviously, that problem with the writing on the eye black, and you know, the suspension for that, for the racial slur, so, or for the homophobic slur. So this is a guy that comes with baggage, and frankly, at all of his stops, has not been a likable player. Mm-hmm. He can hit a little bit. I mean, this is a guy that you know, is a 7-10 home run hitter. You know, his on base skills are pretty decent, but. Last year was arguably the worst defensive shortstop in baseball. Now, Mike Rizzo, during his press conference announcing the move, attributed a lot of that to back and hamstring injuries. And while that certainly could be the case, it's also the case that if the guy was playing through injury, you know, he should have been sitting down and getting healthy as opposed to hurting his team with the poor defensive play. So, yes, it'll be interesting to see him make the transition to second base. He certainly, if he can return to previous norms, will be an upgrade over Danny Espinosa. Now, if 2014 was the beginning of the end of Yunel Escobar, and he goes on to hit just at league average but continue to provide porous defense, then this deal does not look as good. And even if the Nets are saving money on the deal and getting a full-time player in place of that, they're still going to look to have to replace him anyway. So, like I said, if Escobar can return to his previous career norms, then this deal looks pretty good. If last year was the beginning of the end, then it doesn't solve a problem at all.
Yeah, I agree. If he can put up what the Nationals are expecting to, and Mike Rizzo, from what he said, obviously has some pretty high expectations. I think it's definitely a good deal, only in the fact that it moves Danny Espinosa into that utility role, and I like him a lot more there than I do as an everyday second baseman. And people seem like they were sort of resigned to the fact that it was going to be him when nothing was happening going over this winter, but Rizzo's able to pull out, you know, Escobar and get him for Clippard, 1 year, control of Clippard, and see what he does. And I think everyone wishes the best for Clippard because it's hard not to like him and hard not to enjoy what he did. He's extremely successful out of the Nationals bullpen for years there. So do you think they have their arms in-house to fill for him, though? We've talked about that somewhat. I don't think there's anyone on the roster right now who could step in and close if Drew Storen faltered, and I feel comfortable handing that to on a championship-caliber team.
Yeah, you know, that that is a question. If Storen has ineffectiveness or is injured, where would they turn there? It's a fascinating question. We mentioned Casey Jansen earlier today. I think he would be a logical choice for the Nets to bring in as that veteran backup closer, eighth inning guy type of role. I've seen some Twitter chatter about, you know, maybe Rafael Soriano returning. Frankly, I think that ship has sailed. I'm not sure that they would bring that element back to the team again. But I certainly think that having a veteran that has closed before on the roster would be a good idea. I mean, you know, for a week or two at a time, you could probably throw Matt Thornton out there, but I don't think that the Nationals would want to have a left-hander in that role full-time. So I certainly think the Nets have people that are capable of that. I think Blake Treinen or Tanner Roark or even Aaron Baird, I think they all have the skills for it. It just depends on if they have the temperament for it, and you don't know if they do until they're put into that role. I mean, you know, closers, very rarely closers are born. I mean, Drew Storen is one of the rare occasions where he was a closer in college, and he was drafted as a closer, and he came up in the minors as a closer, and he was a closer in the major leagues. Those type of guys are extremely rare. Most closers fall into it out of necessity, and you don't know if they can do the job or not until they're asked to do the job. So if they have problems with Storen and they don't sign a Casey Jansen type, then it will be fascinating to see where they turn to first and how that person adjusts to the role.
I kind of feel like just based on the amount of money he's getting, we should be talking about Max Scherzer more, but there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. We haven't talked in a while, and you mentioned earlier Jason Worth, surgery on his shoulder to clean up the AC joint in his right shoulder. Mike Rizzo talked about it after the announcement that he's going to have surgery, so they could possibly platoon McLeod and Tyler Moore out there, have Michael Taylor out there for a while. I kind of assumed Michael Taylor was going to start the year in AAA and get some at-bats there before coming up for good, but they could start the season at least with a mix of those three out there in left field. And how worried are you about Jason Worth? And they were already moving him over to left field because there were some concerns about his arm and probably more taking advantage of Bryce Harper's stronger arm and right than anything else, but you worried about Jason Worth going forward? I think you said you were with the shoulder.
I just had a chill going up my spine when you mentioned a Nate McLeod, Tyler Moore platoon.
that was Rizzo's idea, not mine.
I am concerned with Jason Worth's shoulder, and I'll tell you exactly why. I had a devastating AC joint injury on my left shoulder, and I've got rotator cuff problems in my right shoulder. I know what shoulder injuries do and how long they take to come back from. The idea that Jason Worth had the same surgery as Ryan Zimmerman did on his AC joint is pure nonsense. Ryan Zimmerman returned to conditioning activities and baseball activities within 4 to 6 weeks. Jason Worth's timetable to return was 2 to 3 months. He had much more extensive damage than Ryan Zimmerman had, and I am concerned that it's going to be 2 to 3 months, most more on the 3 months, for Worth just to recover from his surgery, even before you talk about rehabilitation, getting his baseball strength back, getting his baseball timing back. And the bottom line is that you know, while hands and wrists are critical to generating bat speed, power is generated from the shoulders and upper trunk. And if he is unable to provide power with his swing, then he is reduced to the status of a leadoff hitter, as a singles hitter, as an on-base percentage generator. That's just not where the Nats need Jason Worth to be in the middle of their lineup. I mean, they have a solid lineup top to bottom, but if you take Jason Worth out of it as the number three hitter, the number five hitter, or even as the number two hitter, then you're pushing everybody else into a spot where they are less equipped to deal with it. So, I'm real concerned about Jason Worth's recovery from this shoulder. He's older. Every year he gets older, and these injuries seem to keep accumulating and pile up. And so far, knock on wood, the Nats have been very fortunate that he's been able to recover each time he's been injured and come back to a level that he's been able to establish and maintain the last 3 or 4 years. But this is a big deal, and I think either the media or the Nats have been downplaying it to not stress out the overreaction to it. But a shoulder surgery requiring 2 to 3 months recovery time, not rehabilitation time, but recovery time, is a big deal.
Yes. Do you still think the Nationals need to add to the bench? We talked about some of the bench players. McLeod, Moore is out of options, so he's either on the bench or possibly on his way out of D.C. Danny Espinosa moves in the utility role with Escobar here. Jose Lobaton, the backup bench. Mike Rizzo talked about wanting another left-handed bat to sort of bolster that part of their bench, but I don't see them getting a left-handed bat who's got to play any significant time, even though it's kind of what you'd want with Jason Worth, injury question at this point.
Yeah, you know, I'm perfectly happy with Lobaton as a backup catcher, with Espinosa and Franzen in the middle infield. That part of it doesn't bother me. The backup outfielders right now, that's where I have concern. I mean, even if Jason Worth comes back and he is Jason Worth in the middle of April, you're still talking about your bat benches as Nate McLeod and Tyler Moore in the outfield. And frankly, Tyler Moore's not an outfielder. He's not a major league outfielder. He plays passable defense at first base. He's really a designated hitter playing in the National League, and I think a change of scenery for him to get playing time would be good, because the Nats aren't going to use him as a defensive replacement. Nate McLeod had a very brief renaissance before the Nats re-signed him. He was bad before he got hurt. He's coming back after shoulder surgery, so it's really questionable as to what they're going to get after him. I would really like to see the Nats either make a small deal to acquire a left-handed bat. There's still a couple of guys on the free agent list that might be interesting to bring into that role, but no, I'm not really happy with, as Davey Johnson said, the big hairy guy on the bench sitting next to him, or the Nats options for bench bats in the outfield. Obviously, they've got some talent in the minor leagues. When you talk about Taylor or Brian Goodwin, who was injured himself last year, but those guys need more seasoning. You don't want to bring them up to sit on the bench. If you're going to bring them up, you want them playing every day. And I frankly think that Michael Taylor still needs another 300 to 500 bats in the minor leagues before we see him there.
Yeah, and in addition to your backup outfielder and bench bat, I'll just throw out the question there of who is the backup first baseman at this point. It's either Moore or Franzen, based on what they have on the roster right now. And if either of those guys ended up getting significant at-bats, if Zimmerman dealt with injury issues again this year, I think the Nationals would be in a tough spot right there. But a little throw in to Tom Boswell's column at the Washington Post today was that, according to sources he spoke to, couldn't confirm it, but we're waiting for confirmation on that. Towards the end of this month, Bud Selig might announce that the Nationals are going to get the All-Star game in 2018. And I'll just note that they'll be getting it before the Orioles if that happens, which probably won't go over well. But what do you think about the possibility of the Nationals being a Midsummer Classic in D.C., at Nationals Park, in 2018,
well,
I should note.
Yeah, I think it's due. I mean, the Nationals Park opened in 2008. If it's in 2018, it'll be the 10-year anniversary or whatever. You know, frankly, Major League Baseball stayed away because for so long there was just nothing else near the park. I mean, the teams would have to stay, you know, stay in Crystal City or downtown or whatever, Pentagon City. You know, there was nothing around the ballpark to do. So now that you're starting to see bars and restaurants pop up and a little bit more vibrant neighborhood, it's not surprising that this is coming out. I mean, it's time for it to happen. I'm glad to see that that it sounds like it's going to happen. I think that with the Winter Classic, it really showed that that Nats Park, the Lerner family, the organization, the city of D.C. can put on a world-class daytime event like that. And I think it's time, and I think all of Nats Town should be looking forward to that.
You mentioned the Lerner family. Leading up to the Scherzer deal, Scott Boras talked often about how this is going to be an ownership-level deal that he was looking for. When you're talking about a seven-year, $210 million deal that stretches out over 14 years now, you know it's got to be most likely him negotiating with the owners. But it doesn't hurt that Rizzo drafted Scherzer when he was with the D-backs as the scouting director there, so there's obviously the history there. This is the second really big deal that the Nationals did. They had to deal with Soriano, which was high for a closer, but we're not talking about plus $200 million at that point. But what do you think about Mr. Lerner going out there and making this deal and approving the spending and Rizzo getting a guy that he's known for basically his whole career?
Yeah, you know, obviously Rizzo likes the guy, and there's a lot to like there. I mean, once he learned to control his fastball, I mean, Scherzer has been one of the best pitchers in baseball. I just have to say that the contract structure here is nothing short of genius. I mean, I've seen a couple of different descriptions here by guys that have a little bit more financial background than I do describe how this contract is really going to devalue the longer it gets, as opposed to be worse for the Nats. You know, when you take inflation into consideration and the progression of salaries and that type of thing, you know, essentially they're getting a $20 million pitcher for $15 million a year, being able to defer the payments out twice the length of the contract. So it's just a stroke of genius the way they structured the contract. It certainly could be the case where structuring the contract the way they did helps the Nats, you know, in re-signing one or two of the potential free agents or attracting other free agents. It gives them the financial flexibility to go out and make more moves as opposed to being hamstrung like a lot of teams would be signing a big free agent like this. I mean, I say like this, there's only one other player in Major League Baseball that's got a bigger contract. So really, the Nats are kind of establishing the norm here when dealing with a contract like this.
And I've been thinking all day, essentially, or basically the last 18 hours since this deal was first initially announced, about going to the ballpark every day and watching the starters these guys are going to throw out, barring any further moves. Scherzer, Strasburg, Zimmerman, Pfister, Gio Gonzalez, one after the other. These guys have to be the prohibitive favorites at this point in the National League, at least, if they can shore up the bench and make sure the offense does what it didn't do in the postseason. It's a heck of a team to watch on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, pardon my French, but it's a goddamn all-star team. I mean, you look at those five guys, they've all been all-stars. They've all gotten votes for the Cy Young. I mean, it's just a devastating 1-5 rotation. And if they decide to hold their cards and play the season out the way it is, it's just going to be a lot of fun at the ballpark.
We managed to chatter on for 30 minutes here. Anything that we missed, anything you want to talk about before we sign off?
We didn't even talk about Kealakealaue.
I know he was a big fan out there and had a lot of fans out there in Oakland, so we'll see what he can do and give them that first baseman at least an option down there at AAA. So now we talked about him, and I've managed to avoid trying to pronounce his name. So that'll do it for Nats Nightly, sponsored by the District Sports Page and FederalBaseball.com. Hopefully there'll be some more stuff to talk about this winter so we can get on here again and do it, Dave, but always good to talk to you, sir.
Sounds good. Thanks.